ESPN Daily is presented by Supercuts, the smarter, easier way to get a haircut. It's not just any haircut, it's Supercuts. Jeff, we've made it. We're here. The World Series is starting. And I got to admit, man, like, we've been through eye patches and plumbing emergencies and Twitter doppelgangers with you. I wasn't sure you were going to make it this far, to be totally frank with you.
I wasn't sure I was going to make it even to my hotel today because people in Houston have it out for me.
Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN.
Like, I have gotten so many threats that if I see you, Jeff Passan, I'm going to punch you in the face. And so every step I take in Houston, whether it's in the airport or downtown or otherwise, Astros fans have been a frothing mob, and sports talk radio in the town is fomenting it. They think I hate their baseball team, which could not be further from the truth.
Well, Jeff, we got to clarify here, because the punchability of Jeff Passan's face, I thought, was a thing all of America could agree on.
Very fair.
But what you're describing, Jeff, is a scenario that I am unfamiliar with. So what have you done? Why? What is happening with you in Houston?
I think I told the truth. And the truth about the Houston Astros hurts fans. And it hurts fans, understandably, because fans are rabid and fans are parochial. And fans stick up for their hometown team, even if their hometown team cheated in the year in which it won a World Series. And so maybe I am public enemy number one. If I'm public enemy number one, Pablo, that's a sad state of affairs. It should be like Charlie Morton or Freddie Freeman.
That's right.
Or somebody who actually has some kind of impact on these games ahead.
I love the idea that the bulletin board material in the Astros clubhouse is you. This World Series is not lacking in motivation. For the Houston Astros, a ring would not just be a chance to tell off sports writers. It would be a roundabout form of vindication for crimes past. And for the Atlanta Braves, who shocked the Dodgers, at stake is nothing less than their first championship of the 21st century. So today, Jeff Passan explains how we got here, what we're about to see, and whether or not he'll emerge unscathed. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Tuesday, October 26th. This is ESPN Daily.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured, it was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo, another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
I need to understand, Jeff, how the Astros got here. And here, of course, is the World Series starting tonight against the Atlanta Braves. We'll get to the Braves in a bit here. But the Astros, just to set the scene here, because you've alluded, of course, to the whole sign-stealing scandal using the video room, all of that stuff, which baseball fans and general interest fans by now are familiar with. But it's worth reminding them, right? This is five straight ALCS appearances. This is the Astros' third trip to the World Series since 2017. So what is actually at stake, do you think, for this team here?
I'm not going to say that the Houston Astros, if they win the World Series this year, would wipe the stain off of 2017. I will say this. What they'll do is validate the sadness of the fact that they had to cheat. Because I feel like it's very similar to Barry Bonds and to Alex Rodriguez and to so many others who were caught up in the performance-enhancing drug scandal in Major League Baseball, where they were incredible at what they did on a baseball field and, frankly, didn't need to go out and cheat because of the wondrousness of their talent. You can look at all the other things that the Astros stood for, and it's embarrassing, whether it was the reaction after they traded for Roberto Osuna, who'd been alleged to have been involved in a domestic incident, and the Astros saying, we have a zero tolerance policy. You can look at the Brandon Taubman situation when, after the Astros clinch an American League pennant, Taubman is there looking at female reporters yelling audibly for everyone to hear, thank God we traded for Osuna, as if to rub it in their faces. And yet the baseball talent that has been assembled here, it's lasting. And only two other teams have been to five consecutive league championship series. And no team since the 1999 to 2003 New York Yankees has been to three World Series in 5 years.
So how they got past the Red Sox to get to this point, to get to this level of rarefied company, Jeff? I mean, when you look at the spot the Astros were in going into the eighth inning of game four of that Red Sox series, man, they were on the verge of going down 3-1. And the Red Sox, of course, that was a team that seemed cosmically charmed. So what happened?
After the Astros lost game three, I thought they were done. And I thought they were done because I'm still a sucker who buys into this idea of momentum. And the Red Sox felt like they had all of it at that point. And look, I'm not going to blame pitch number 268 on the Boston Red Sox season being done.
The set by Eovaldi, and the 1-2 is outside. He tried to backdoor him with a breaking ball, and he just missed.
Took a couple steps towards the dugout. Eovaldi, he thought he got him. That was a strike.
Yeah, he might have had him.
It was the 21st missed ball strike call of the game, according to the rulebook zone, and yet none had higher leverage than this one. It was a two-strike count. There were two outs in the inning. The Astros would have been done, and the Red Sox would have had a chance, frankly, to go and walk it off in the bottom of the ninth. Instead, well, the Astros score 7 runs. The Red Sox can't score the rest of the series. And Houston is in the World Series now, not just because of that pitch, of course, but because Framber Valdez came back in game five and threw 8 brilliant innings. Because Luis Garcia comes out throwing 2-3 miles per hour harder than he ever has. The fact is, the Red Sox offense disappeared, the Astros pitching stepped up, and the Astros have Yordan Alvarez and a bunch of brilliant hitters, and they all played to their role.
The guy managing all of this, Jeff, is Dusty Baker. And when you've been covering Dusty Baker for what feels like a million years at this point, right? This is 5 different teams he's taken to the playoffs. This is his second trip to the World Series. I'm curious if you remember the reaction around Dusty Baker's hiring at the time in the midst of this scandal that was still obviously quite putrid smelling.
I think the feeling was the perfect guy for this team right now, because what Dusty Baker is above all else is cool as hell. Dusty Baker is the guy who you want to hang out with. Dusty Baker is the guy that you want giving the speech at your wedding or at your funeral. Dusty Baker is the guy who, under pressure, whether it's because he's done it as a baseball player for a decade plus and a really good baseball player, or done it as a manager in 5 different places, is brought in quite often to clean up messes. Now, let's remember, Dusty Baker was the manager in the throes of Barry Bonds' performance-enhancing drug scandal. Dusty Baker was the guy who survived Steve Bartman. He's been through the Washington Nationals, winning 95-plus games two consecutive seasons, and him being out of a job nevertheless. He's seen it all, and he is going for something that has so long eluded him that if we want to talk about karmic destiny and justice, Dusty Baker emerging from the 2021 season with a big old fat gold diamond ring on his finger would be the world looking at baseball and saying, it's time. It's time.
Yeah, and Jeff, for the record here, it does feel like Astros fans are absolutely hoping that Dusty Baker is presiding over a ring ceremony in this World Series and absolutely also simultaneously your funeral. But I digress. But I do want to ask you about the composition of this particular Astros team, because the guys that we've talked about, right? The Correas, the Bregmans, the Altuves, there's a bigger story here. And the names that are worth mentioning, they weren't even around, right? During the scandal in 2017 that we were discussing.
It's interesting, Pablo, because it, you know, the turnover in baseball, I don't think the majority of people recognize this, is profound. And we're not even talking 5 years ago at this point. And the number of players left over from the 2017 team who are going to be on the 26-man World Series roster for the Houston Astros, it's four guys. Mm. That's it. And all four of them happen to play in the infield. Alex Bregman at third base, Carlos Correa at shortstop, Jose Altuve at second, and Yuli Gurriel at first. That's it. So while so many of the guys on the team right now have lived with the fallout, understand the consequences, have paid the price in being seen as villains, getting booed, having trash cans thrown on the field, you name it, most of them had nothing to do with it. And you could even argue, if you look back at the statistics that a guy named Tony Adams in Houston put together, and Tony is an Astros fan who tried to be reasonable and logical and fact-based about this. He discovered that Jose Altuve really didn't like getting trash can bangs when he was at the plate. Mm. And Jose Altuve has sort of become the face of this scandal, right? You know,
yes.
He's the one who the unfounded conspiracy theory of wearing a buzzer was put out there and has stuck to him. And trust me, I've talked with a lot of people. There's been a book out on this by Andy Martino. Nothing on the buzzer. There's a book coming out by Evan Drellick on this. Don't believe there's going to be anything on the buzzer. Mm. So the idea that the buzzer played some sort of role in what the Astros did, that it went beyond the trash can, I think has stuck in the minds of 29 other fan bases. And if you want to understand why Astros fans are as aggrieved as they are, it's because of these secondary things. It's like, okay, our guys cheated, but no, that wasn't good enough. They have to have cheated worse. That's how they feel. And I get the frustration there. I also think the, yeah, but everyone else did it, looks past the fact that no, not everyone else was getting live video and relaying signals from a trash can in the dugout by hitting it. And the Astros were guilty of felonious assault on the sanctity of the game of baseball. And if that makes me sound highfalutin, if that makes me sound like somebody who cares too much about a game, then if we're talking American judicial system here, I'm guilty of that, and I'm okay with that. I feel all right about that.
So, Jeff, in that case, I need you to go from prosecuting this team that allegedly knew what was coming to understanding the team that caught you completely by surprise after the break.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Jeff, when I look at the Atlanta Braves of 2021, the name that comes to mind still is the name of the guy who is not available. And that's, of course, Ronald Acuña Jr., their superstar, their all-world outfielder, who we've talked to you about for a long time on this show. He's been out since July because of a knee injury. How did that knee injury inadvertently pave the way for the Braves to get to this World Series?
So this happened when we were in Denver at the All-Star game. And that night, we had a big ESPN dinner. And I remember getting a text, just said ACL. And I was like, oh God, no.
Breaking news here on SportsCenter. Ronald Acuña Jr. will need to undergo season-ending surgery after an MRI showed a complete tear of his right ACL.
I think I'd had a glass of wine, and I got to go on SportsCenter, and I'm setting up my computer in my hotel room. Like, it's a total debacle at that point. And I say this to set up the fact that I believe on SportsCenter that night, I said, this almost certainly means that the Atlanta Braves, come the July 30th trade deadline, will be sellers.
If the Braves are going to be anything at this deadline, it's going to be a team that is trading players away rather than looking to acquire.
What I didn't know was Alex Anthopoulos, the president of baseball operations for the Atlanta Braves, believed in this team still. And so you lose Acuña, a top five player in baseball. Your pitching staff is a question mark. Your bullpen kind of stinks. All these things, and the fact that you're behind the Mets in the standings, lead one to believe potentially that, yeah, you know, maybe this isn't just our year. But Alex Anthopoulos does not operate that way. And he went out and started by getting Jock Peterson and continued by completely remaking his outfield, a point of weakness for the team all season long, on the fly. Atlanta essentially remade its team for a bunch of low-level, high-risk prospects, non-prospects, or in one case, just straight cash. And the way that they were able to maneuver and end up with what they've got now is one of the more incredible stories of trade deadline maneuvering I've seen in my almost 20 years covering baseball.
And Jeff, like, in your defense here, right, when you look at the regular season standings, I mean, it does not foretell dominance from these Atlanta Braves, right? I mean, 10 teams made these playoffs, and of those 10 teams, nobody had a worse record than the Braves. Nobody. Toronto, Seattle, they won more games than Atlanta. They missed the playoffs. I mean, you can go down the list and all these mathematical comparisons to make the point. So how did this team, full of a bunch of groceries that nobody thought would amount necessarily to this feast, how do they get past the Dodgers who won 106 games? How do they get past them in the NLCS?
I want to start by saying, if, you know, we can look at record, but we also should look at run differential. The Braves had a plus 134 run differential. It was better than Milwaukee. It was better than St. Louis. It was better than your Yankees. It was better than the Red Sox. So this wasn't like some kind of scrub-ass team that just backed its way through a poor division into a playoff spot. We have to remember what the Braves do have. And we talked about the great infield of the Houston Astros. Atlanta's got a pretty great infield itself with Freddie Freeman at first base, Ozzie Albies at second base, Dansby Swanson at short, and Austin Riley, who's in the midst of an extreme breakout year, at third. They've got Travis d'Arno behind the plate. They've got starting pitching. Certainly all you need is three starters, it seems, these days. And they've got Charlie Morton, Ian Anderson, and the best of the three this year, Max Fried. And what they've got in the bullpen is what made the difference, Pablo, between them advancing to the World Series and them being just another Braves team in a long line of them to flame out. And the idea that I would be sitting here and talking about the Atlanta Braves bullpen being a strength when the most constant thing in September and early October was Will Smith trending on Twitter. And we're not talking for like getting jiggy with it, Pablo.
No, Jeff,
we're
we
talking
are not.
About, no, we're talking about Will Smith, Atlanta's closer, who over the last month of the season was like a walking nitroglycerin prescription. I mean, if you watched Will Smith at the end of games, your chance of a heart attack went up by a good 75%. And the fact that that guy has not given up a run this postseason, the fact that the Tyler Matzek, who was almost out of baseball a couple of years ago, who had the yips, has turned into this absolute monster reliever, the fact that A.J. Minter hasn't given up a run. This is like Nasty Boys 2.0. And the Braves, they're just full of surprises. At the beginning of the playoffs, yes, if you had told me that Atlanta was going to advance the World Series, I would have thought that completely crazy things would have needed to happen in order to make that a reality. And the truth, Pablo, is that nothing crazy really happened. They were just better than the Dodgers.
But one of the things I do feel like qualifies as crazy, Jeff, is the fact that the NLCS MVP is Eddie Rosario.
Yeah.
And on that, I mean, I think of what was said after his home run in Game 6 against the Dodgers.
A three-run homer by Eddie Rosario. He just electrified this crowd, and the Braves have a 4-1 lead.
Who is Eddie Rosario, and where the hell did he come from?
So I come to you, Jeff, on the eve of the World Series to ask you exactly the same question. Who the hell is he, and where the hell did he come from?
Eddie Rosario is a 30-year-old left fielder from Puerto Rico. And more than a decade ago, he was taken by the Minnesota Twins in the draft and sort of slowly worked his way up the chain, stuck in the big league because he could hit a little bit. He's a guy who had 30-plus home runs one year, who is famous for not walking, like, ever. He's just a free swinger who hits the ball and hits it pretty hard sometimes.
Rosario hits one well to deep right field. Back at the wall, that one is gone! Rosario knocked the living daylights out of it.
He's also a guy who was absolutely terrible for Cleveland this season.
Mm.
I mean, he stunk up the joint. And come the trade deadline, honestly, I wasn't even calling around and asking, where's Eddie Rosario going to move? Because I didn't think anyone wanted him.
Yeah, did he ever show flashes of this? Did he ever show this level of potential, I should say?
I mean, the potential was always there. But let me illustrate the difference between Eddie Rosario, Cleveland dud, and Eddie Rosario, Atlanta god.
Please.
In 306 plate appearances for Cleveland, Eddie Rosario hit 7 home runs. In 106 plate appearances for Atlanta, Eddie Rosario hit 7 home runs. And so we saw the pop. We saw the thunder. We saw that during the regular season. I don't think we thought he was capable of giving the Braves what he gave them in October, though.
Offering to Rosario. Line drive. That is through. It gets through. Here comes Dansby. Lightning strikes twice, and the Braves walk it off. This is unbelievable.
So the idea that you're going to have this guy who goes out and OPSs over 1,600, who bats 560, who hits 3 home runs, including the one in Game 6, off of Walker Buehler that proved the difference. That Eddie Rosario really did come out of nowhere. And it's one of those things that Atlanta fans 25 years down the road are going to be talking about. Remember that week that Eddie Rosario transmogrified from mortal to God.
So that's the guy we're shocked to find out is an MVP of the NLCS. The actual MVP on this team, the guy who actually won that award, of course, is Freddie Freeman. That's the actual bona fide franchise cornerstone. That is the franchise cornerstone, by the way, who is facing free agency this offseason, Jeff. What do you think this World Series is going to tell us about the future of that guy?
I think it's telling us that he's going to get that sixth year that he was looking for in contract negotiations. Freddie Freeman wants a longer term deal, and he should want one, because not only is this a guy coming off an MVP type season, but this is a guy very similarly to Eddie Rosario who does the same thing every year. He bats 300, he gets on base 40% of the time, and he slugs 500 plus. Mm. And those players are so rare. And to have that coming from someone, Pablo, who debuted at 20 years old with your team, just a couple of years after he was drafted out of high school, who's been with the Braves ever since, and we're talking 12 seasons now, who conducts himself privately and publicly in manners that make both himself and the team look really good. Like, Freddie Freeman is the guy around whom you want to build. And the idea of seeing him in Yankees pinstripes,
ooh,
or in San Francisco Giants uniform, or in Dodger blue, or whatever it may be. If there are any Braves fans listening to this right now, and I'm sure there are, Pablo, they might have just thrown up in their mouths.
So, speaking of startling fashion choices, Jeff, this is the part where I ask you to tell the people who have not yet seen what Jock Peterson has been up to, where you tell them what Jock Peterson has been up to. Because when you turn on this game tonight and that dude steps to the plate, this isn't the pregame tunnel, this is the actual game. Paint the picture of what we're going to see.
What you're going to see is a grown man who is wearing a pearl necklace. And I can't say I've ever seen a man wearing a pearl necklace before. Now, that's the sort of thing that you associate, like, with grandma. Like, Grandma Joan got her pearls on today.
Yep.
Big occasion.
God bless her. Big day, got her Sunday best on.
No doubt about it. But I gotta say, why haven't men wore necklaces made of pearls before? Because it looks good.
Like, it looks great.
It looks really good. I really appreciate how Jock Peterson is pulling it off. And when asked about his pearl necklace,
my favorite
why
part,
he's wearing it.
My favorite part.
No, I yield the floor to the host, Pablo, because for those who haven't heard, I mean, it's the great quote of this postseason.
No, because the guy who rounds the bases with the pearls bouncing up and down around his neck, he gets asked, you know, well, like, why are you doing this? And first he says, it's a mystery for everyone. They'll never know. And then a few days later, he tells reporters, it's because I'm a bad. And grandma has a point. Grandma Jock Peterson is a badder than I ever realized, Jeff Passan.
I think I've probably always known Jock Peterson's a bad he has bad air about him. Jock Peterson has this reputation. He is the guy who is never going to sit there and break down analytics at a deep level. He is the epitome of C-ball hit ball. And this postseason, Pablo, he has seen the ball extremely well, and he has hit the ball extremely well.
Swinging a deep drive to right field, hit with tremendous force. Tie game, home run, Jock Peterson. He just sent another pearl into the chop house.
If somebody who steps up in October in baseball is not definitionally a bad, honestly, I don't know who is.
Jeff Passan, a bad by any definition. Don't get punched in the face in Houston, man.
I make no promises, Pablo.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. I'll talk to you tomorrow.